The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Morning, you.
You're right. I do hope you are. Not too disappointed if you are a football fan. I do hope you are. Me, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, of course. It's just ticked past 8 in the a.m. British summer time on Thursday, the 16th of July, in the year of our Lord 2026. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you guys, it's not a thing, is it? It's nothing without you guys. Appreciate it. Somebody in the chat I saw the other day, I sometimes go back afterwards, can't really look at the chat in real time, other than just an odd glance. I said, oh, he's got the contempt for his audience. I feel like the absolute opposite. I love you guys. People that aren't hate watching it. Weirdo lefties and reformed tards. If you're not that, I love you guys. You're my people. As always, I'm joined by Harry, my producer. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
Disembodied voice of the all-powerful producer there. Should we get straight into it? There's no need for all that fannying about, is it? Let's stop faffing about and just get straight into it. All right. Oh, well, it's football, isn't it? Football. World Cup dream over and Mahmoud for Chancellor. They've gone straight back to talking about Burnham and Nigel's finances and the impending Burnham government. But the big story, it's on all of the front page. I warned you, didn't I? Did warn you that today would be the day, whether we win or lose, it's every single front page apart from the Financial Times, I believe. So don't worry. I still won't do all that much detail on it. But we'll talk about it a little bit because this is sort of the zenith of it, isn't it? This is the high watermark of football talk in the news, on British news anyway. This is the apex of it, the apogee. It's all downhill from here. On Monday, I'll mention that either Argentina or Spain actually won it. I'll just mention it on Monday and that's it. And then it's all over. And it's gone, right? So, but just a couple of minutes on it. I mean, if you really, really despise football, you can't bring yourself to listen to it. I mean, what can I tell you? Suck it up, buttercup. Going to do a couple of minutes on it. All right. We lost 2-1 to Argentina. That's it. Went 1-0 up. Do you know what, though? Look, England's World Cup dream is over. Hey now. Don't dream it's over. Hey now. Do you know what it feels like to me? Well, I've been a football fan my whole life. But over in the last 15, 20 years or so, just stopped caring about it, basically. Because I've been burnt too many times. Too many times being a West Ham fan, yo-yoing, getting relegated, going back up, failing to get promoted again, going down again. Supporting England. Get your hopes up every 2 years for the Euros and the World Cup. Just to have your hopes and dreams dashed to pieces. On the rocks of reality over and over and over and over and over and over again. So like yesterday, when England went 1-0 up, 1-0 up in the World Cup semi-final against the Argies, I started to dare to dream just a bit. I mean, I didn't even celebrate. I'm watching it at home and they score a goal and I just sit there almost impassive, just like, oh, yeah. Like the 15-year-old me would be going berserk when that goal scored, berserk. I'd be sitting there on tenterhooks for the rest of the game. And then when Argentina get the equaliser, I'm like, And when they score the winning goal, I'm like, That's it. Again, the 15-year-old me, 16-year-old me would be inconsolable. For days. I'd be gutted for weeks, or gutted for the rest of my life in a way. Take it that seriously. I'm done with it. I've been done with all of that for many a year now. It's a harsh mistress. Football is a harsh mistress. It really is. So I never get my hopes up anymore. I just don't. It doesn't seem worth it. And do you know what it feels like to me? This will be the last I've said it, and then we'll move on, and then there's no more football talk. I'll say this. It felt like to me, have you ever had this experience? Where you've been in a long-term relationship, and it gets bad. It goes bitter. Maybe you've married, and then you're divorced, and the relationship gets dark, it gets bitter, it gets competitive, it's horrible, and you end up, someone you loved, someone you deeply loved, you end up hating them, and they hate you, right? You ever had that? And then you break up, you divorce, whatever. Years go by, years and years go by, time heals some of those wounds, and you attempt to just reach out to them, just one more time, one tiny text or email or something, just a tiny bit of tiny fig leaf, because you shared a life together and you loved them. You do one tiny little gesture of, hey, how are you doing? Something like that. Just for old time, literally for old time's sake. And they throw it back in your face. And they're just horrible and mean. And then it's just, you know, at that point, surely, it's completely, completely, completely dead. You'll never contact them again. They may as well be dead to you. They're just someone you used to know. Just a memory, nothing else. You'll never see or speak to them ever again. It's finished, it's done. That's what this game felt like to me with football. Like, you got my hopes up one more last time. As cynical as I am and broken as I am about football, you got me again. For 30 minutes there in the second half of that game, you got me. You drew me in again. I started to hope, started to dream, and then you shattered it. Again. It's really what it feels like to me. Okay, that's it. That's really it. No more football now. Other than just scrolling through the front pages. That's it. If you hate football, no more. Other than briefly mentioning on Monday who actually won the thing. All right, so the Telegraph. England's World Cup dream is over, right? Andy Bumham, King of the North, no Stern and Burnham, says, I'm ready to ask for a little more from taxpayers, says Burnham. More? Please, sir, can I have some more? More? We're being taxed more than we've ever been taxed in all of history. But Burnham wants more. Again, it's a classic socialist thing, isn't it? Classic socialist thing. Don't tell me you haven't got money, Prole. Kulak. Tell me you haven't got money. We're going to squeeze you and squeeze you and squeeze you until you're starving to death. Cut spending? No. No, no. They've got to pay for our invasion, haven't they? They've got to pay endless amounts of benefits to the people that are invading us. In fact, here's a little story. Let's see if I can find it. Here we go. In the mail. Andy wants to tax us more. More. In the mail, here's a story. Family of 18 from Gaza wins human rights challenge to allow them to come to Britain in major blow for Labour. Bear in mind, well, I'll read a bit of this. Bear this in mind. The government, from whichever party it is, they wanted to, could leave the ECHR and could do any sort of act of parliament to prevent this from happening, exactly this sort of thing from happening. Right? Parliament is sovereign. If they want to change the law, however they want to do it, and they can get it through, that's it, it's law. There's no, you know, the royal sign off on the end of it is just crossing the T's and dotting the I's. House of Lords can't do anything, ultimately. So if the government wanted to prevent this sort of thing from happening, they've had years to get all their ducks in a row to stop it from happening, but they don't want to do that, do they? family of 18 from Gaza. Just listen to some of the facts of this. A family of 18 from Gaza has won the right to come to Britain after launching a human rights challenge in the British courts. Already, right away. It's like, what on earth? So, actually, I won't bother reading it. I'll just tell you the details. There's this one woman came over from Gaza and got British citizenship. A Gazan-born mother of three. Came over from Gaza as a refugee a few years ago. And she's now a British citizen. That's already a travesty. Why? Okay. And she asked to bring over her entire extended family. That's both her parents, a brother and his wife and their four children, a sister and her four children, and another sister and her husband that also have three more children. She wanted to bring over 18 more people. None of them can speak English. She can barely speak English, the original anchor woman. All the others can't speak English. They obviously haven't got jobs or anything. Are they militant Islamists? Don't know. The adult ones, anyway. Don't know. We don't ask that sort of thing. That would be racist, wouldn't it? That would be big. That wouldn't be British. That wouldn't be in line with British values to even ask. Right, so she wants to bring over 18 of her relatives who are obviously going to be a drain on our society. Obviously. She's got to find housing for them, got to find school places for all the kids. Don't worry about how massive classrooms are anymore. Got to find spots for them at dentists and on the NHS and everything. Endless. Doubt they'll find good jobs and be net contributors to the Treasury anytime soon. Right, so the Home Office actually, in the first instance, said no. They blocked the attempt in the first instance. And then this, the original mother of three, the original anchor woman, then takes the Home Office to court over it, appeals the decision, and has won. Has won. Gone through a couple of different tribunals, and it's won. The judge, let's find the judge's name. Who is the judge in this? Judge Gemma Loughran. Loughran? She decided that the Home Office was in the wrong, and because of the ECHR, the right to family life, under the European Convention on Human Rights, and under Section 6 of that Act, sets out how it is, quote, unlawful for a public authority to act in a way which is incompatible with a convention right. All right. Don't worry about Britain and the native people and the quality of our society, how much it costs us, whether it's in our interests. Don't worry about that. The most important thing is their right to a family life. She could have gone home. Too dangerous. All 18 of them have got to come here. And that's it. The Home Office can't do anything about it. The only thing that could be done, and that wouldn't happen, this wouldn't happen quickly, of course, is that the government pass a bunch of legislation, acts of parliament, probably need more than one, who knows, repeal something here, add something there, to change all of this, to leave the ECHR and make sure judges' hands are bound to do this sort of thing to us. But in a case like this, it's just a slam dunk rubber stamp. No. Of course not. You're going to take the Home Office. Imagine that. You go to another country. You go and live in another country. And then you want to bring over 18 of your relatives. And that country doesn't want it. And you take them to court over it. Filth. Absolute filth. I'll just throw it on the pile. Another 18 Gazans. Just throw it on the pile. Sure, don't worry about who they really are or what's in their heart and soul. Don't worry about any of that. Whether they're militant Islamists or anything. Nope. Just come over. Start claiming benefits. And Andy wants to tax us more. Okay. Police arrest man over threat to, quote, shoot Farage in the head, quote. Good. Good. Apparently some dude, youngish dude, said on social media somewhere, if Nigel wins, I can't remember if it was whether he wins this by-election that's coming up or whether he wins at the last election in 2024, said, if you win, I'll shoot you in the head. Describes himself as a terrorist, apparently. What was in that article? Nigel gets loads of... Nigel's not the only one, of course, but he will be sort of a lightning rod for this sort of stuff. Gets threats all the time, like that. Proper death threats. And until now, according to them, and I can believe it, according to Reform and Nigel, and I believe it, until now, the police have just never done anything about it, ever. You can report it, you can tell the police, and they're like, we'll bang up Lucy Connolly or Sam Melia. But these people, what can you do? Get over it, Nige. Stop being such a snowflake, the police would say. Until this one. So this is the first one. In fact, we've got a... let me find an article. Was it... Yeah, here we go. In ITV News. A little bit more detail on it. Man arrested over social media post threatening to shoot Nigel Farage. A man in his 20s has been arrested over an alleged threat to shoot Reform UK leader Nigel Farage made in a post on X. The suspect was arrested on Tuesday over the social media entry from May ahead of the local elections. Oh, it was over the local election stuff. And said, I am going to shoot you in the head if you win, according to the Telegraph. Farage formally resigned from Parliament last week. But okay. Statement on Wednesday, Metropolitan Police. Let me just read this bit. After receiving the report, detectives submitted an application to a social media platform to gain access to the user's account information. Following the initial report, the suspect was arrested at an address in South London and has since been bailed pending further inquiries. Here's the thing. Nigel told the Telegraph he has faced multiple threats on social media, quote, for years. Yeah. Once again, I've said it, maybe this is the third, maybe the fourth time I've said this. I disagree profoundly with Nigel, politically. In fact, not all that profoundly. A lot of things I agree with. But on the key things about demographics and things, I disagree with him. And yet this is outrageous. Don't want a hair on his head harmed. Of course. Of course. His person should be sacrosanct. Of course it should. He said, Nigel said, this is the first time the police have ever proactively acted on a social media post. The first time. And I hope they're looking at the other 300 or 400 similar posts from this year alone. They've basically, the establishment, the police, whatever you want to say, they've basically left anyone on the right out to dry, haven't they? Left our asses swinging in the breeze. They're responsible in a very direct sense for Anne Widdicombe's death, aren't they, in some ways? Of course, the actual murderer is ultimately responsible, isn't he? Like, the vast majority of the responsibility is with him, nonetheless. You know what I'm talking about. Anne Widdicombe could have been protected, couldn't she? A lot more. The state could have done something, anything, anything. So her home and her person was entirely unprotected. Entirely. Could she have been more vulnerable? No. Not really. No. Well, hopefully things will change a bit. There's been talk around Westminster in the halls of power that they are going to look at giving every single MP and, in fact, people that are ex-MPs some level of protection. The issue with that is it doesn't really... It's good. I welcome that, of course. Why not? Why not? Doesn't really address the crux of the matter, does it? I.e., they've created a society where left-wing terrorists feel they're on the right side of history and are morally correct in doing anything, almost anything. Remember this person from, I think it was yesterday? This fella. This dude who hoped Anne Widdecombe died in pain. Vile trans troll who wished extremely painful death on Anne Widdecombe is just tip of iceberg for nasty Green Party. This article just happens to sort of, you know, shine a light on it again and also say that I think they're a failed Labour council candidate and now they're in the Greens. Now they're in the Green Party, this dude. Just making the point that over on Blue Sky, because they can't hack X, over on Blue Sky, just like a pit of like left-wing vitriol and bile. And that they doubled down. This fella doubled down. When called out on it, he sneered, "I'm done with being nice to pieces of human garbage like her." Right, so giving each MP a bit, even ex-MPs, a little bit of protection, it doesn't address that, does it? People like this. Horrid Heather, this article decides to call him. Horrid Heather. It doesn't address that, does it? And in reality, even if you've got like one bodyguard dude, even if he's pretty competent at what he's doing, it's like an ex-police security dude or an ex-military dude, even ex-special forces. If someone really wants to get you and kill you and they're even prepared to sacrifice their own life, then they can do it. Ever seen the film In the Line of Fire with Clint Eastwood and John Malkovich? I quoted Michael Corleone from Godfather Part 2 on Twitter the other day, where Michael says they want to get Hyman Roth, don't they? Tom Hogan says, you can't kill him. It'll be like trying to kill the president. You can't get to him. You can't do it. Michael says, if anything is certain in this life, if history has taught us anything, you can kill anyone. References to super high profile assassinations through the centuries, from Julius Caesar to John Kennedy. So giving MPs a little bit of protection, it doesn't address the malaise in our society that left-wing people think they're morally perfect and will justify horror. Horror has a face. Horror. Okay. We used to have, not that long ago, a homogenous society where political assassinations were essentially unknown. Second half of the 20th century. You can go back, you can look at earlier centuries when there was one or two, right? Spencer Percival, or whatever, one or two. For decades and decades and decades in this country, effectively unheard of, essentially unheard of until recent times. What changed? What's changed? Something happened in 1997 that began to change that balance, that paradigm. Something happened. Victims warned of sex attackers' early release. Great, well done. Thanks, Starmer. Thanks, David Lammy. Thanks, the Labour Party. Thanks, the Fabian Society. Cheers for that. Brilliant. Well done. Well done. Yep. Your goal of ruining our civil society. Good job. You're doing a good job at that. If that was your goal, you're achieving it quite efficiently. Okay, the Sun, we lost the football game. 60 more years of hurt. Wonder ball. Harry Kane shed a tear or two. A lot of them did, of course. Like crying, bawling. Wonder ball. It's a bit of a stretch. The Daily Star, again, football. Caned by Messi. We're still proud of our Lions. All right. Starmer had his last PMQs yesterday, and it was a relatively civil affair. Quite often they do that when it's someone's last PMQ, a Prime Minister's last PMQs. It's usually quite civil and they're sort of kind to them. I remember Tony Blair's last one. I remember Gordon Brown's last one. Cameron's last one. They usually, the other side, they usually sort of clap them out with a little bit of dignity. If Starmer's got any left. The shortest serving Labour Prime Minister, I heard this morning. Could that be right? I suppose it is. Even the ones in the 20s would have lasted more than like 18 months or however long he's been in. One of the last things he said was the people of Clacton should vote for Count Binface. Or at the Metro. Gross. Revolting. Stomach turning. Like a squash slug. Don't need to see that. Nothing of any import whatsoever, as usual. Just the football. It's the moment England's World Cup dream comes to an end. Oh, well. The Mirror. We lost the football. We shattered. Shattered, okay. The Daily Mail. The football. Night Owl dream finally died. Okay. The Express. What do you reckon it is? Any guesses? Football. Agony as our wait goes on. Harry Kane, he's struck down with agony. It's only a game of football. Get it in perspective. Get it in some perspective, right? As much as I like football and I've spent a big chunk of my life being a football fan, when I was younger, it was my whole life. All I cared about was playing football, watching football and talking about football. But at some point you realise, just a bunch of millionaires kicking around a bit of leather. Right? Imagine England did win the World Cup. Then what? Then what? What changes? Nothing. Nothing. You get to feel a bit of sort of vicarious pride in your national side. That's it. The world goes on. Nothing's actually changed. Agony. Struck down by agony. Yeah. It's not that bad. Calm down. All right. What's this? The Guardian. Guardian pretending it even cares remotely. Look, make sure we get a picture of some diverse fans. Farage told backers, I need a million a year to stand as MP. So right, they're straight back to it, right? They're straight back to it. Bernard Mahmood and Farage's finances. Farage's strategy of calling this by-election, it's not going to work. And that you can draw a line under it. There's no more questions to be asked or answered about it all. No, dude. No. That investigation, like the actual parliamentary standards investigation into it, is on hold for the time being, but it will start again if you win that by-election, which he will. I doubt Binface will beat him. Highly, highly, highly doubt that. It will start again as soon as he's returned as the Right Honourable Member, or sorry, the Honourable Member for Clacton. That investigation just starts again. Remember the day Nigel called it? Some people on Twitter said, oh, no, that's all over now. No, you're mistaken in that. Okay. So this is an article, an allegation or a story sort of mirroring some of the things Ben Habib had said that behind the scenes, effectively, you know, like over lunch where it's not being recorded and no minutes are being taken. It's not a matter of record over lunch or whatever. Over brandy and balloon glasses and cigars at a gentleman's club, whatever it was, Nigel said to the super rich people, whether it's Christopher Harborne or whoever, said, I'll come back to frontline politics and be an MP, but I'm going to need $1 million a year to do it because I'm making decent bucks outside of Parliament. Like GB News alone were paying him a million or over a million a year. So if nothing else, I'm going to want $1 million a year to do it because the MP's salary is nowhere near that. It's actually not bad. What is it? 90 grand, 100 grand a year to be an MP, something like that. It's not peanuts, but it's not really sort of life-changing money. It's not sort of FU money, is it? Still quite a lot, actually, I think. But NIAID wanted a mil a year. It's just the allegations. Again, it's not a matter of record in any way. But that's the sort of thing, similar-ish adjacent to the sort of things that Ben Habib had alleged. And that you've got someone that's like a billionaire, like Crystal Harbaugh, somebody like Crystal Harbaugh, goes, we could do that. Million a year, 5 years, five mil. I can find that. That's pocket change to a man like me. Yeah, no problem. We could change British politics and you, our boy, Nigel, will be in number 10. And we've got your ear for five mil. That's a steal. Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, five mil. I make five Crystal Harbaugh, I make 5 mil a day in interest on my billions. I don't know if he does exactly, but, you know. If you're a billionaire, 5 million's not too much of a problem, is it? You can stretch to it. Anyway, so, yeah, the allegations, whether they're true or not. And then the real, real question after all of that is there actually anything illegal in that? Is there actually anything wrong with that? Because you can just give people a gift. It isn't illegal for Crystal Harbaugh just to have given Nigel £5 million. That's not illegal. They're trying to get him on a technicality, really, aren't they? Should he have declared it? And perhaps even more salient than that, as I say, was there quid pro quo? Was Harbaugh or whoever expecting more from Nigel once he was in power? Would Nigel start changing legislation and things that would benefit Harbaugh and his cadre? If so, then that is bad. Then that is sort of corruption. But we don't know that, do we? We don't know. That's why we should really wait for the investigation to finish. Whether you can even trust that. Whether that's not an entire stitch-up to try and ruin Nigel regardless. Which it may well be. That's not beyond the realm's possibility, is it, whatsoever? That's what the reform people are saying. The whole thing's a stitch-up. It's conducted by people that hate Nigel and want to thwart Nigel at any cost. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's not fair, is it? It's really, really, really not fair. They'll try and do something. They'll try and do something similar to Rupert, I'm sure. And anyone around Rupert. If and when they genuinely fear them, then they'll do something similar. Yeah. They genuinely feared Corbyn, didn't they? What can we do? What can we get him on? Oh, he's pretty pro-Palestine, pretty pro-Islam. Let's paint him as an absolute anti-Semite. Destroy him that way. Well, on the next one up, the next person we need to destroy because he's not globo-homo enough. He's not subversive enough. What can we get Nigel? People do seem to like him. His policies are actually quite reasonable. We've tried painting him as a racist and a Nazi. Doesn't seem to be sticking. What about his finances? Yes. There's something slightly irregular there, or could be. Let's pack out some sort of standards committee with people that are sure to condemn him. Yeah, that'll work. Hey, guys. The angle is, the strategy is, a billionaire once gave Nigel £5 million. We might be able to spin that to absolutely ruin him. Let's all attack from that exact same vector. Okay, yeah, got it? Meanwhile, don't talk about anything George Osborne ever did, yeah? Don't talk about Lammy and all the people that give him loads of money and who they are and what they might have expected in return for that, yeah? Don't mention that. Just lie by omission about that every single day, yeah? The Financial Times. Here we go. No football in the Financial Times. Shabana, look at this. What is that? She's going to be the next Chancellor of the Exchequer, apparently. City relieved as Bumham poised to choose Mahmood as his Chancellor. This thing. Does she know anything about macroeconomics, political economy? Does she? I'd like to know that. I don't think she does. I doubt she does. Ask her about Adam Smith. Ask her about the Wealth of Nations. Ask her about John Maynard Keynes. Ask her about Bretton Woods. Ask her about anything. Ask her about anything. Does she know? doesn't really seem to matter, does it? She's their token brown woman. That's it. That's her credentials to be the Chancellor of the Exchequer of the United Kingdom. Is that she's their token brown woman. A Muslim. Pakistani descent Muslim. That's her qualifications. Not whether she knows about economics. Mad. We must be mad. Literally mad. Thanks, Labour voters. Thanks for that. Well done. Brilliant. Well done. The Times. Look, we lost a football game. Kane hugging Messi. Right, okay. Burnham keeps wealth tax in play. I heard one or two rumours. No idea if they're true. Just make that clear. No idea if what I'm about to say is true. Just rumours. Just scuttlebutt. That maybe that Gary Stevens, is it Stevens or Stevenson? I can't even remember his name. That Gary fella, who seems to be a recovering drug addict, will turn up to a proper interview on TV in shorts and a T-shirt. That weirdo, who also seems to know nothing about political economy. Really nothing. Rumour was that he might be in Burnham's team. God knows if that's true. God knows. Obviously not as Secretary of State or anything like that. I mean, he's not an elected official, but you can just get people to be a financial advisor. You can just put them, you can just give them a job as some sort of advisor at the Treasury or whatever. Okay. You just give them a job in number 10. But they get to be, their voice is powerful. Don't know if that's true. Just heard that. Man, it'd be true. State of public finances may require people to, quote, pay a little more, quote. You're not going to cut spending, no? No? Well, that wouldn't do, would it? That wouldn't do. The left wing of your own party, Andy, would eviscerate you if you even start talking about that, let alone doing it. But of course that's what's required. It's bad to say, we will have to go through a period of austerity. True austerity. World War II level. Clement Attlee, late 40s level austerity. Because we're bankrupting ourselves further and further and further by spending beyond our means. Drastically spending beyond our means. But no, you won't address that. You just tax people more. Until what? Until there's nothing left. A wealth tax? So you're going to cause a tsunami of the super wealthy just fleeing the country. That hurts the bottom line even more, doesn't it? Doesn't it? It does. Of course it does. Incoming PM will not shy away from tough decisions. Oh, Andy Burnham's tough, is he? Andy Burnham's a tough politician. Is he? He seems super weak to me. Seems like a doughboy. Pillsbury doughboy, not a World War I American soldier doughboy. Probably is quite tough. Well, they were tough, weren't they? Not that. A man made of dough is what I mean. Soft, nothing, empty shirt man, Andy Burnham. He's going to be, we won't shy away from tough decisions. Sure. Andy Burnham's a man of steel, is he? He's super weak. It's a total pussy. Oh, well, sorry. Shouldn't swear on the Bo Show. I do apologise. Although, is that really a swear word? Borderline, isn't it? Bit blue. All right, the eye paper. England lost a football game, remember? Okay. Care workers to get NHS-style annual pay rise. Social care workers will receive pay rises every year as government tries to bring their wages closer to NHS employees and tackle staffing crisis. New negotiating body includes unions and employers and will determine pay. England moving towards a national care service, care minister tells the iPaper. All right. They're the front pages. That's Fleet Street for today. Should we have a look at our poll? We usually have a look at our poll at this time of the show, don't we? Okay. All right. We asked you guys, is the British government right to nationalise the steel industry? Oh, That was something that didn't come up. I did find a story. I thought it was an interesting story. Is it... where was it? Here we go. On the BBC. Government brings British Steel under public ownership. Crazy, really, that it's not in on the front page. It's even below the football. A big deal. Really big deal. Okay, British Steel has come under public ownership, fully nationalised, after the government moved to, quote, protect UK steelmaking. There's a particularly massive steelworks in Scunthorpe, one of the last major sites in Britain. And it was under the control of a Chinese company, Jingyi. No idea if I'm pronouncing that right. Jingyi. I'm going to say Jingyi because it's my birthright to just anglicise foreign words shamelessly. It's what we do. If there's anything British English people do best, it's shamelessly anglicising foreign words. Okay, this thing's not letting me show, but basically, I suppose in a nutshell, basically what it is, that big works in the Scunthorpe was sold off to a Chinese company because it was they say it was losing something like £700,000 a day, and the previous owners just couldn't afford it. It was just unsustainable. So if we sold it to a massive Chinese corporation, Jingyi, perhaps they would be able to pump in loads of investment and make it profitable again. No, they seem to have just cancelled loads of the contracts very quickly, very, very quickly, started talking about laying people off, started talking about closing it down entirely. Oh, right. Oh, okay. So then we're talking about a bigger thing now here. We're talking about sort of using broader strokes of the brush. Let's talk briefly, just 5 minutes or so, about nationalisation versus privatisation. Now, you know me. We should do. I'm right of centre. I've got one or two views that are just flat out centrist, but usually right of centre. That's my worldview. And nationalising things is a classic sort of lefty thing to do. Right. Look at the Attlee government on the State of Politics the other day. State of Politics. Did a video all about the Attlee government. I might do a longer form epochs in much more detail. Instead of 20 minutes, I'll do like an hour and a half talking about Attlee. Classic lefty thing, communist thing to do, socialist thing to do, is to nationalise as much as you possibly can, i.e. the government control it, not private enterprise, private industry. So, there's that. But of course, it's not perfect. It's not perfect to privatise things, because what if the people that own those companies, what if they don't have the best interest of that company or that country at heart? Right? What if you privatise your railways, but it's a French company that buys them, or an Italian company? And they don't care if ultimately don't care. It's just one part of their giant corporate holdings. And they're looking to make as much money out of it as they can. And if that fails, oh well, it's failed. It was only like 3% of our overall ownership of things across the world. What then? What if you sold your steel industry to India, Tata Steel, or the Chinese, Jingyi, or whatever? And they don't care. In fact, ultimately, on the grand strategic level, they would rather Britain doesn't produce any steel. That weakens us. That's in their interest, ultimately. What about then? So, in other words, what I'm trying to say is, bit of a balancing act. It's not as simple as nationalising thing is a lefty thing to do, and it's always best to privatise everything. Otherwise, you're some sort of commie. It's not as simple as that, is it? It's a bit of a balancing act, isn't there? Sometimes it must be in our interest to nationalise something. Would it not be? Either nationalise something, which is a bit red in nature, or it gets completely annihilated by the Chinese, or the French, or the Italians, or the Americans, or the Indians. Well, then that's a no-brainer. Don't do that. Don't do that. And it's not like we're talking about Britain's tofu industry, is it? We're talking about steel. If you can't produce your own steel, high quality steel, you're in real trouble. You are then completely reliant on other countries that you buy it off of. And if for some reason they decide they don't want to sell to you anymore, for political reasons or economic reasons, and then you're done. Then you've got no steel and you can't build things, whether it's girders for just normal buildings or whether it's to build ships or artillery pieces or whatever. If you cannot produce your own steel, you're not really a player in the world at all. You just won't be. You will be second tier, 100%. You'll be somebody else's bitch. Again, should I say that? Borderline swear word. You'll be someone else's prison bitch if you don't produce your own steel. Okay, so the British government, I would say, in this instance, because it's steel, right, because it's steel, it's not a nothing industry. It's a hyper-important one. Hyper-important. Then it was a good, in my opinion, and this isn't coming from a place of leftist economic worldview, isn't coming from a place of Marxist theory, coming from a place of what's in the interest of England, Britain. Well, in this case, in my opinion, it was best to nationalise it because that Chinese company meant to destroy it. One way or another, they were running it into the ground, whether deliberately or not. Far be it from me to suggest that it was completely deliberate, that that was always their plan. Who knows? But in this instance, I guess it was best. And the government have said they intend to keep it open. Save the 3,000 jobs, 2,700 jobs, and keep it open because it's in the national interest to do so. Yes, yes, finally. Finally, it was that one thing Keir Starmer did. Perhaps keep us out of the Persian War, largely. It was also good. Okay, with all that said, on our poll today, knocking up towards 1,000 votes, we asked you guys, is the British government right to nationalise the steel industry? And the ayes have it. 68% of you say yes, and 32% of you say no. So 2/3 of you say yes, roughly, nearly, basically. Just over. Yeah. I think so. I think so. I have to put aside the sort of grand ideological view that nationalising things is just nearly always wrong. No, it's not always wrong, is it? Not always the incorrect thing, the incorrect path. Not always. Again, I've said before, haven't I, that I'm not against unions in principle. It's a classic lefty thing. As long as they're not subverted by communists and socialists, the principle, the concept of a union isn't terrible, isn't bad. Like this, the principle, the concept of nationalisation isn't inherently wrong. Okay, all right, the ayes have it. The ayes have it, at least. There you go. Me and at least 2/3 of the glorious band, the chosen few, in unison. You're my people. And I'm your boy. Good stuff, all right. It is already gone 1:45, so... Should we move on to the on this day in history bit? Oh, one other little story I thought was of interest. J.D. Vance went on Joe Rogan. And the other day, I haven't watched it yet, but I read this article, which sums it up, summarises it. And he admitted that they, the Trump administration, screwed up the release of the Epstein files in a very sense. He's saying Pam Bondi's a good person. She wasn't doing anything nefarious and wasn't deliberately like screwing it up. But nonetheless, it was sort of basically screwed up. We absolutely screwed up the comms. That's the quote. That's what he said. But it wasn't because they were trying to hide something. Sure about that? All right. Don't really believe that, but all right. On this day in history, let's have a look at that. You guys quite like that bit. I quite like doing that bit. On this day, the 16th of July, down through the centuries, what happened of note? In the year 622, an important year, the Islamic era begins. Muhammad the Prophet Muhammad and his followers begin migration from Mecca to Medina, the Hijra. Was it Hijra? Hijra, the Hijra. They flee from Mecca, because him and his family and his followers were from Mecca, weren't they? They have to flee Mecca. Don't worry about what they've done to instigate that. To Medina. Story is, goes on to form armies, retakes, returns to Mecca, taking it, and so on. This isn't a history show, so I won't go on and on and on about that. It's a long story. Interesting story, right? I think so. Maybe fictional or largely fictional. Tom Holland in The Shadow of the Sword talks about how it may just be fiction. The original sources are shaky at best. Okay, on this day in 1054, the Great Schism between Western and Eastern churches begins when Roman Cardinal Hubert issues a bull of excommunication against the Patriarch of Constantinople on the altar of the Hagia Sophia in Constantinople. Yeah, the Great Schism there, starting Eastern Orthodoxy and Western Roman Catholicism. Again, so much could be said about that. I could do a couple of hours talking about that. I'm just not going to today. Well, 2 hours. I'm not even going to spend 5 or 10 minutes on it today because I need to get going before too long. Got recording today. Not on the podcast, but got other recording I've got to do. Just a big thing, though. The Great Schism. It was always sort of likely to happen ever since, well, centuries before that. It was in the making, really. Eastern Orthodoxy and Western Catholicism profoundly disagreed on more than one sort of important point. Okay. On this day in 1519, public debate between Martin Luther and theologian John Eck at a castle in Leipzig, during which Luther denies the divine right of the Pope. That sort of thing gets you taken to a dungeon in Rome and you're never seen from again. But not in this case. Martin Luther was ultimately protected by German lords and was never taken to Rome or executed or anything for his heresy. Again, talked all about it before a number of times on Epochs. More than once, talking about those popes and the Reformation and also... In fact, even some of the last few episodes I've been doing about Henry VIII. This is in the age of Henry VIII. I didn't talk a fantastic amount about Martin Luther himself and his trial, but are talking all about the break with Rome in the early 16th century. Okay, on this day in 1809, La Paz in Bolivia declares its independence from the Spanish crown and forms its own junta. It's the first independent government in Spanish America. Bolivia. I threatened to do an epoch all about Simon Bolivar, or maybe a mini-series all about Simon Bolivar. I will do that at some point. It's relatively near the top of the list, for sure. Okay. On this day in 1940, Hitler orders preparations for the invasion of Britain, Operation Sea Lion. There was a period there in 1940, after the Battle of France, after Dunkirk, before, during the Battle of Britain, where the Nazi high command were thinking about doing a full-blown invasion of the British Isles. In the end, Hitler decides Operation Barbarossa is more important, i.e. the invasion of the Soviet Union. It must come first. Close one thing, though, they did draw up relatively detailed plans for Sea Lion. Hitler couldn't do both at the same time, and he decided the more pressing threat to his Reich was from Joe Stalin and the Reds. Okay, on this day in 1945, first test detonation of the atomic bomb at Trinity Site, New Mexico, as part of the US Manhattan Project. Fascinated by that. Did a bit of content just the other day, didn't I, about... I was on the State of Politics, actually. Harry Gaydar Steenkamp. State of Politics. Did a video all about the British bomb, where I also talked a little bit about the Manhattan Project. Fascinated by the Manhattan Project. Might do an epoch about that in long form detail, full hour, hour and a half, 2 hour long. We have content all about the Manhattan Project. Fascinating. And yeah, and Trinity was the first test, the very, very first one. Where Oppenheimer says, he's become the destroyer of worlds. He's become death, the destroyer of worlds, quoting from the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, all right. Turning point in history. There was one world before Trinity, wasn't there? The pre-atomic age. And then we're in a whole new world after that moment. Okay, let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Let me do this with my mic so I can see the left-hand side of my screen properly. Is Global Church History going to be in at number one? Suspense. Is he going to be in at number one? Yes, and still. And still. First name Global, middle name Church, last name History. Mr. History tells us today, gives us two factoids. Today in 1377 AD, Richard II was crowned. Oh, okay. You want long-form content of me talking all about Richard II? Yeah. Peasants Revolt, one of the boy kings of the Middle Ages. He was only like 9 or 10 when he became king. Right, he was Edward III's grandson. Edward III lived to be too old. Old king syndrome, he lived too old. He outlived his own son, the Black Prince, who should have been the king. Would have been Edward IV, Black Prince. But he died of natural causes in like middle age. And then when Edward III finally dies, he has to pass to his grandson, who's only like 9 years old. Well, that's Richard II. Not a great king. He's considered like foolish. Definitely one of the worst two or three. Or four. He had some favourites, didn't he? Piers Gaveston. Oh, no, wait. Now, Piers Gaveston was Edward II. There's a lot of parallels, though, between Edward II and Richard II. Lots and lots of parallels, interestingly. A couple of generations apart. Was it the Earl of Oxford? De Vere, Robert De Vere. Robert De Vere was Richard II's favourite. Just mismanaged everything, Richard II. The only good thing, well, he just mismanaged everything. Ended up getting himself deposed, arrested, thrown in a castle under arrest, and then never seen alive again. Probably starved to death. Was it Pontefract Castle? Still there. On LightCetus.com. You can consider signing up for as little as £5 a month bronze tier membership. Hundreds and hundreds of hours without exaggeration of me talking about history. If you're so inclined. All right. And the second factoid Global Church History gives us is Jack Cartier returned home safely from his voyage. Are you Canadian? I've asked you that before. You're interested in that, isn't it? Jack Cartier, the French explorer. Again, in the 16th century. He sort of he mapped for Europeans like the Gulf of St. Lawrence, St. Lawrence River. I feel like you've mentioned him more than once, and probably only a Canadian would do that, or a Frenchman. I don't think you're a Frenchman. I'm not going to besmirch your good name by saying such a thing. All right, thanks for that. Next one, Pigdog 5150 says, morning, missed the show 2 days ago, listened after. You mentioned you liked Roy Orbison, the Big O. He's all right. He was a brilliant songwriter, very creative, great voice, one of my favourites. Yeah, Roy Orbison was really good, yeah. A lot of people in the industry say he was one of the all-time greats. Got some really good songs. A bit of a sad life as well. Suffered a few tragedies in his life as well. Okay, the next one's also Pig Dog. You say, it rained. We had rain! Exclamation mark. Planting in soil that is like talcum powder because it's so dry is quite an experience. The US Dust Bowl must have been horrendous. Yeah, the Dust Bowl, talked about that once or twice during the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl. Yeah. We needed a bit of rain, didn't we? It's getting a bit like actual drought conditions. All the grass has been sort of seared yellow. Yeah, we've had a bit of rain though. Good. They're saying the heat wave is largely over now, probably, at least for a while. Who knows? We might have an Indian summer. All right. And the last rubber rant today, Acid Helm, says, "Hi, everyone. Hope all are well in the studio and, of course, within the loyal band. The chosen few. Been enjoying my week off. Went away for a couple of days with my partner and I proposed. She said yes. Smiley face. Well done, sir. Congratulations. Well done. Brilliant. Well done. Love it. Good for you. Really, genuinely. Good for you. Acid Helm. Keeping it real. Living the dream. Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. The YouTube Super Chats. Harry, if you could do that for me, could you make it so? Engage. There they are. Okay. Great. We've got a dozen or 20 odd. First one, quite a decent amount of money there. That's very generous. Thank you from Quite Blackpilled. That's their name. At Quite Blackpilled says, "If humanity ever faced a global threat and we had to muster every great warrior, stroke man, of our history, it is easy as a Westerner for me to think of our contribution. Alexander, Leonidas, Patton, Cornwall, Grant, Lee, etc." Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Our history is filled with great men. Yeah. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of names you could throw out. Yeah. There was one great struggle. Who would you want as overall CO? Someone like Alexander or Caesar or something. Probably want someone who knows about modern warfare, so it'd have to be someone from relatively modern times. Would you want Ike? Eisenhower? He was a good manager, wasn't he? Can't deny that. Would you want someone more like Patton? Would Patton's military skills be outdated in the 21st century? Who knows? Maybe not. Maybe you would want someone who was a true master and just bring them up to speed with modern tactics and weaponry. Someone like Belisarius or Alexander. Just give them a few weeks to get them to learn about modern war. But ultimately, you still want someone like that. I don't know. Interesting, though, isn't it? Interesting. Talks about that with Dan Carlin. I once did a long form interview with Dan Carlin, the Dan Carlin of hardcore history fame. I asked him a question along those lines. If you're interested, it's on History Bro. It's my channel, History Bro. There's no paywall there. Everything's free on that one. History Bro. Again, hours of me talking about history if you want that. Okay. Quite Blackpilled again. They said, the next quite... Three are all the same from Quite Blackpilled. They say, "As a historian, what of the East? Saladin, Genghis, Attila, any more you could give me? I'm sure the Japanese have a lot of venerable men." Yeah, of course they do. Yeah, yeah. Littered. Their history is littered with it. From the East, oh God, there's so many sort of Persian kings, Parthian kings. Yeah, many, many more Mongol leaders of various Mongol hordes. I mean, Tamerlane, for example. I like referencing Tamerlane, don't I? Timur and the Lame. There's so many. Just like in the West, there will be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of names you can pick from. Okay, the next one, also from Quite Blackpool, says, "Sorry for the two-parter." That's all right. No apologies. No apologies necessary. And next one again, "For the honourable gentleman who landed the moderator job for a Bo's Breakfast Club, hashtag real BBC, tried to leave some women for the rest of us." Yeah, we've got to sort that out. Again, I can only, at best, glance down at the chat once or twice during the show, at best. So I don't have anything to do with it, basically. But it has become apparent that sometimes there's real douchebags in there. Like all chats are. If your chat is more than like 8 people, there's probably someone being a dick in there. We'll try and see what we can do to sort of moderate it a bit. But yeah, I'll need to talk to a couple of people, Cameron, after the show, actually. See if we can make that happen sooner rather than later. Okay, the last half a dozen. Oh no, more have come in, so there's still 10 or more to go. MQSSS or MQs says, "South Africa has deported 53,499 foreign nationals over 5 weeks in an ongoing operation financed by billing their respective embassies directly. Thoughts?" Yeah, it's great, yeah. Just goes to show, in South Africa, So, in South Africa, the government thinks they've had too many other black people from more northern parts of Africa come to South Africa. And they don't want them there. They don't want loads of people from the other countries that border South Africa and beyond. South Africa for the South Africans, the South Africans say. And if you're there, and then they want to deport all those people. And they're doing it. So it puts paid to the lie that you can't do it. It can't be done. Yes, it can be done. The examples throughout history are many. And they're still going on to this day. Russia deport loads and loads and loads of people. Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, South Africa. If you've got a government with the will to do it, you can do a mass program of forced remigration. That lie, someone like, I don't know, or any of our enemies, anyone that writes for The Guardian or whatever, will say, you can't do it. It's a fait accompli. Britain must just accept its future of demographic decline. And there's nothing, they're here now, they're our problem now, these millions of foreign invaders, 10, 20 million since 1997, who knows how many, but it's in the millions. You cannot deport them. Nonsense. Nonsense. Of course we can. It just requires a government with the will to do it. Of course we can deport them. History is littered with examples of that. Look at the way India, Bangladesh and Pakistan deported all the white people they didn't want there anymore. Oh, they can do it. All right. South Africa can do it. But we can't. Nonsense. Of course we can. Of course we can. And we will have to. It's inevitable. Because it's that or demographic destruction. You can't deport all these people. Yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. We're gonna. Millions must go. Aim high, vote low. Okay, Tiger says, just bought a 2022 Cupra Formentor and wanted to flex. Don't know what that is. I'll now have emissions. Oh, is it a type of car? Emissions equal to 10 bus riding vegans and cap get wrecked. Harry, you know a bit about cars. Is it? Is that, do you think that's a typo? Is it meant to be a Supra? I can't hear you.
Oh, there you go. I think it's a Cupra?
A Cupra Formentor.
Yeah, give me a second.
Yeah, Google it. Google image it, mate, for me and bring it up so I can see what that is. Okay, thanks for the super chat though. In a moment, I will have a look at the what you're talking about there. Okay, next one. Strong and Co. says, did you feel it? The disturbance in the force. It happens once every 4 years. For one glorious moment, they stopped rubbing our noses in diversity. Yeah, for one moment, you might be allowed to wave a St. George's cross. And then go back to, no, only Nazis would do that. Okay, Harry's bringing up, oh, okay, that's not a bad motor. He's just brought up a picture of that car you've mentioned there, Tiger. Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. Hmm. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Would you like to own that car?
Oh, I couldn't dare.
Bring it up on the screen so people can see real quick. Why not? You do that? You make it so? Okay, and there you go. Boom. Tidy. Not bad. Not bad. Okay. All right. Let me have the mouse back. What else have we got? David Betts, 1180, says, UK Steel, rebuild HMS Warspite. Send to Falklands. Yeah, the Argentina players, that was one story which I didn't bother going into because you don't like football and don't care, but one of the stories is after the game where they're all celebrating, they brought out a flag that said, like, Los Malvinas. They're our islands, basically. You're not allowed to do that. FIFA have got very specific rules about you can't do political stuff like that, but they did it anyway. But they're not there. They're not your islands. They're not your islands. We've been there hundreds of years before your country existed. Oh, the indigenous people of Argentina, did they go there? in the Middle Ages or during the ancient world and settle it? No, they didn't. Have you got a government that's badass enough, like the Galtieri government, to go and take it from us? No, you haven't. So stop going on about it. They're our islands. Windswept little islands in the South Atlantic. All right. It's a matter of principle at this point, isn't it? All right. You've put... The next one is... from Strong & Co. again. Next time the sports ballers think they want the England team... Sorry, one moment. Okay. Next... Harry, can you somehow make... There you go. Okay, you sorted it for me. Sorry. There was a slight thing kept popping up. It's gone now. Strong & Co. says, next time the sports ballers think they want the England team to win, just close your eyes and imagine James O'Brien monologue the next day. James O'Brien, what a disgusting freak. Is he an alcoholic? Usually you only really get that complexion, sort of colouring, if you've got a drink problem. No idea if he has. Just asking the question. Bro, just asking a question over here. Does he struggle with the old booze? It looks like he does. It's painted all over his face that he does. Don't know if he does, though. Might just be high blood pressure or something. He's a bit ruddy, isn't he? James O'Brien. He's a bit of a mental subversive, isn't he, James O'Brien? Mental. Historians will look back at people like him and say he helped cause a sectarian nightmare, a bloodbath in this country, if and when it comes to it. People like him that argued for a society that leads directly to a Yugoslavia-style bloodbath. Horror piled upon horror because of the arguments that James O'Brien has spent his entire life advocating for. What a disgusting freak. Okay. Larry Waterwitz says, hello from Philadelphia. Oh, Philly. Flip. Philadelphia. Flip. I'm really from New York City, and I'll admit I'm a progressive. A progressive lib. But I'm a big fan. Oh, well, welcome aboard. Hope you're doing well. Stay strong and positive. Thank you, sir. If you're a progressive lib, but you're watching the Bo Show, you'll come over to us soon enough. One of us. At some point, it's the classic, it's almost to the point of cliche, isn't it? That people, when they're young, are progressive and liberal or even left-leaning. And as they get older and older and older and they get a family, they start owning property, they just learn more about the world and reality, how the world and why the world goes round, why the way is it. They learn about history. They realise, oh yeah, some of my thinking was a bit off the main beam. Actually, at the very, very least, conservatism with a small c is better for nearly all humans at all times. You'll join us. Self-proclaimed progressive lib, but watches the Bo Show, watches Load Seaters. You'll join us properly. Anyway, welcome aboard. You are welcome, sir. Okay, the next one. Tiger says, steel nationalisation is simply a question of national communism versus global communism. The lesser of two evils, as it were. I don't want to just leave dead air, just mulling that over. The cardinal sin is dead air, isn't it? So I don't want to do that, but... national communism. What is that? Is that a thing? National communism. What do you mean? What is that? I guess you're just... Okay, you'd have to unpack that for me a bit more for it to make any real sense in my mind. What you mean? I think I know. I think I know what you're getting at. Anyway, we're playing with quite big concepts there. Haven't really got time to unpack that all and give you 5-10 minutes about that. Interesting, though. National communism. All right. Well, just communism, you mean? Right, okay. Marcos 588 says, food, money, factories and resources equals independence. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you can't grow your own food, you don't control your own money supply, you don't build or manufacture anything, and you don't have any natural resources, you don't have access to resources, then you won't be independent, yeah. To be honest, there's only a small number of countries in the whole world where that truly applies to. Right? The United States, Russia and China, maybe one or two others, India, Brazil, where they've got everything they might need. If the entire world cut them off and made them a complete 100% pariah, would all their people starve and they'd have no heavy industry? There's only a few countries that could deal with that. For a start, you need to be a giant country, don't you, to be resource rich. China, Russia, America, India, Brazil. There's no way England could, you know, Britain does not have the natural resources, everything we would ever possibly need to continue to be a player on the world stage. We're a tiny little island, really. Tiny little island, of course. But you're right. You're quite right. Food, money, factories and resources equals independence, yeah. You have to be one of those almost continent-sized countries, though. Okay, Quite Blackpilled again says, congrats Acid Helm, remember 3 kids is the minimum. Yeah, Acid Helm, congratulations on getting hitched or getting engaged. Now have a massive family. Okay. Tatum2733 says, this is the penultimate one as well, says, I work at a theatre and the Odyssey is opening tomorrow, stroke today. I'm US, it's 4 a.m. Not looking forward to it, but we'll be reading it behind the counter. Lol. Oh, yeah. No, do read it. Or listen to an audiobook just on YouTube. There's more than one video of it being read for you, unabridged. Listen to it while you're doing other stuff, pottering around the house or whatever, playing a game. I do that. I listen to audiobooks a lot while I'm just doing other stuff. Whatever I'm doing that on autopilot, and I'm listening and concentrating on the audiobook. Yeah, The Odyssey is great. I read it for the first time when I had to for A-level. Read it again at undergrad. And I've listened to an audiobook a couple more times since then, later in adulthood. In fact, re-listened to it not that long ago, a week or two ago, because I knew all this was coming up. Yeah, it's a great story. Your classic homecoming story. There's only a few stories. The archetype of a story. There's only like 10, 12. One of them is the homecoming, and the Odyssey is the example par excellence of that, right? Odysseus, Ulysses, returning to his wife Penelope, and all the trials and tribulations in order to get there. Classic. Okay, another one is coming. So now the penultimate one is from Max Robe, who says, Falklands for the Frisians. Says that, is it the same person who says that, the Frisians, everything Frisian power. In fact, was it Max Robe in the comments the other day who said Bo's contempt for his audience is astounding? I hope you were joking. I hope that was like ironic or something. Okay, and the last one today is from James Lee Pevenhall, who says, earliest reference to football I can find, 1339. I thought it was much. I didn't think it was anywhere near that old, but okay. If you say 1339, Darnhall villagers playing football with Abbot Peter's head. Okay, I don't know anything about that. I've never heard anything about that. That's interesting. It's like in The Man Who Would Be King, where they're playing polo with the head of Uhtar the Terrible. What dictates the size of the ball is the size of the guy's head. Okay, I don't know anything about the apparently murdered Abbot Peter in Darnhall in 1339. Interesting, interesting. I wonder if that is the genesis of football. Okay, one more's coming. I will read it. It's from Tiger again. They say, industry in the hands of commies in your home country is bad, but in my opinion, it is the hands of globo commies is arguably even worse. Oh yeah, oh definitely, right. I mean, I see what you're saying, I suppose. I get it. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. They really, really don't care if the thing fails. If not, they're actively trying to make it fail. All right, that's the show. It's now 19 minutes past 9 in the AM, British summertime, on Thursday, 16th of July, in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. Really, really appreciate it. Without you guys, it isn't a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead. Carpe diem, seize the day. The most valuable thing you will ever have is your time. You've only got it once. Once this day in history is gone, it's gone. If you're in the position to make it count, to do something valuable with your time, do try to. All right, I don't want to get too preachy about it. Until tomorrow morning, then. Take care.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.